I got 2 pages on this motherfucker.
Oh, boy. Wow.
2 pages of notes.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you, Matt. I don't know how you felt. You know how I feel about it, but...
Well, this was this was a surprising pick, and one that I certainly your favorite genre of all.
Oh, total! And it was felt when you announced what we were watching.
Yes,
it was bubbled over with joy.
That one sneaked by me because I tried to separate all the scary.
Sure,
I tried
it
to
did.
Save all the
right.
scary ones for Halloween, but some of them, you know, some
right,
of them sneaked
right,
by.
Right. Sure you did.
Yeah, wow.
Can we start by saying this is a remake? Like, this is a movie that they redid.
Yes.
And I haven't seen the
I
original.
Haven't either.
But I got to imagine it was better than this movie.
It is very well regarded. We should probably say what we're talking about, maybe.
Yes, sorry.
No, I mean, they know because when they clicked on it, they saw the movie. But we should probably just, you know... For the sake of full transparency here, we should probably reveal the movie.
Sure.
Drama. I still haven't mentioned it, by the way. It's The Haunting.
The Haunting.
We watched The Haunting. And man, oh man.
Yeah. The Haunting. I don't know where to begin with this.
Okay. Yes, The Haunting. Released in 1999. And yes, it is a remake of a... From what I hear, a much better film, which itself is based on a rather famous book, The Haunting of Hill House, by Shirley Jackson, okay. who is like a famous horror author, and yeah, and then they decided let's remake it, and actually it was Mr. Steven Spielberg. This movie started.
What?
Yes, he's the because it was made for Dream.
No,
yes, it was made for DreamWorks, and this is late 90s. This is 99. This is right at the beginning. And he initiated the project, and it was actually going to be, it was him and Stephen King were actually collaborating
okay.
to make a movie
okay.
based on The Haunting, but it ended up kind of falling apart.
I was going to say,
King was not,
because those two seems like that would be a good movie
awesome,
or
right?
something,
yeah.
but
it never came to pass, and then Spielberg passed the directing duty on to Jan de Bont, who directed Speed. He directed Speed and Twister. So two pretty big ones. And
okay.
also
okay.
he was a cinematographer early in his career. He shot Die Hard, I think one of the Lethal Weapon movies. Mm-hmm. So you'd think he'd know what he's doing. You assume
he's
that.
Got a resume.
Although he did make Speed 2. So that he doesn't have that going for him. But
or this one.
This movie this is one of those ones that I had very vague memories of, but I was like, I remember this movie being a thing, and I remember going to the theater and seeing it. And like I said before, I only remembered the teaser, which I remember being really scary. And just to show you my lack of interest in watching this movie, I didn't even look up that trailer to rewatch it again. I just was like,
I watched it because I was like, I found it like. It was the thing was I was trying to find where I could watch it, and so like when I clicked on the thing to like rent, it just plays the trailer like as if like, hey, let me give you a teaser of like, you know, what it's gonna be, and so like it's a scary thing, and this movie I don't know where to begin, Matt. I am naturally very scared about everything.
Sure.
Like it, you know, I'm well, just generally, you know,
life,
romantic comedies can be scary to me. I'm not a scary thing. I hate scary things. Hate them.
Yes.
Hate it. And this movie starts off scary, and it proceeds to get less and less scary as it goes on, to the point where by the end of the movie, I was laughing. I was outwardly laughing, going like, "This is ridiculous."
I just wanted it to be over. I just wanted it to end.
So did I.
Like,
and it has a good cast.
It does.
I mean, like it has a good cast, including the first note I have on my sheet here of two pages is I wrote shitty couple in a tough situation, and I forget the actress's
Virginia
name, but
Madsen.
It's the sister in
yes
she's awesome. She's an amazing actress.
I totally
and
forgot
she
was in it.
is Right. And even the I've seen, I don't know who the actor, her husband in that movie, in that scene is, but I've seen him in a couple other movies as well. But like, I thought, oh, well, she's in it. She's going to, there's, she's got to come in involved. No, she's not she's in gone. It ever again.
She's gone immediately. We never see her again. Yeah. And it's, yeah, well, it's Liam Neeson. We got Liam Neeson. We got, we got Catherine Zeta-Jones. I mean, I kind of just want to spend the whole podcast talking about her. But we also got, for a comic relief, we got Mr. Owen Wilson.
We do.
Which was a thrill. And Lily Taylor plays the main lead, who is a great actress. She's been in a lot of great stuff. These are not the kind of roles she usually takes and plays. And I felt, honestly, this is the main thing that the overbearing feeling I had during this entire movie is I felt so bad for these actors. Bad for them.
Yeah.
I mean, Liam Neeson is like, by the end of the movie, he's like, what the fuck am I doing in this movie?
He literally says that. He says that. It's supposed to be part of it. He says that. It's supposed to be a line that he's like, what am I doing? I should have gotten out of this. I should have left this
contract
earlier. And he's not. That was a moment of honesty that he was thinking in that moment. It wasn't an actual line. He improvised it. They caught him off camera somewhere.
Why did I listen to Spielberg?
Why? I should have left this long ago. You know,
it was. He's like, I already did Schindler's Bloody List.
What am I doing?
Fucking garbage. Tragic. Really?
Yes.
Sad.
Well, I have to imagine this is not one of those films that everyone saw. So to give everyone a synopsis of it, this film is basically, in essence, there is a quote-unquote, a scientist is trying to do a study on people's reaction to fear and how they do it, but he doesn't tell them about it. So he brings them to this house.
It's so fucked up.
He brings them to this
house.
It's
so fucked up, the premise.
Yeah. So he brings them to this house, which I guess is known, he knows is supposed to be haunted-esque of it. And then he's going to watch them and kind of document their reactions to this particular thing. And it turns out that the house is actually haunted. And then, you know, that's it. That's the movie. Yes. And you're dealing with that. So that's all you really need to know. Because that's literally about all that you need to know.
That happens anyway. And that's all. This was like... This was kind of just a bummer, I found.
Oh my God.
Like to see such great actors, and also I will say, and this unquestionably, the movie looks incredible. The production design is amazing. Like,
this house. Yeah. I wrote down this house is fucking amazing.
It's spectacular. Yeah,
and it's not actual house. Obviously, I looked it up. I was like, is this a real fucking house? Because this thing is amazing.
Yeah, no. The exterior.
And they're like, no.
Exteriors are like a real castle, but of course, all the interior stuff is like sets. But it's like fucking incredible sets.
It's amazing.
Like it really looked.
Yes.
It gave me big. Like it kind of. It made me nostalgic for like. Whipstaff Manor and Casper and like that.
You said Casper. I just said the Casper. I was like, this is like a horror flick that they set in Casper. Yeah. Like that is what it feels like. And I think it also has to do with later in the film, the special effects quality of it is also reminiscent of Casper.
Casper's way better.
way better. Yes, way better. But yes, Casper, I was right on it. Yeah, yes, Casper.
It was giving me big Casper vibes. And I mean, to the point where I wish I was watching.
And not Casper Van Dien.
Oh, no, sorry. He was like, oh, his ears perked up, and he was like, oh, they're talking about me. No.
No.
I'm sorry. Maybe tomorrow.
Sorry, Casper. Maybe
next time. The premise of this movie is really so fucked up of Liam Neeson's character. It's so misleading because he is basically specifically looking for people. Although I was confused by his criteria for choosing people for this study. Like, What exactly? Like, he seemed to want like unstable people, or I don't know.
Yes,
and but then he brings him to this haunted house that he knows has this sordid past. It, basically under the auspices that they're going to have a sleep study because they all have insomnia. So he tells them it's going to be a sleep study, and it's not at all. He's deliberately taking them somewhere because he wants to study their fear and their reaction to the hauntings that are to the haunting of the title.
Yes. So let's go back to this sleep study. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because first of all, he's doing a study on fear, but there are only three participants.
That's all you need.
Three.
That's all you need. That's
three.
Yeah. That's the entire.
It is three people. Like, it's. And they went. And okay, so that's A. Yeah. Okay. B, they're doing a sleep study, and somehow they've chosen to do the sleep study in, like, this mansion. Like, at no point does anybody, like, ask the question, like,
yeah.
What sleep study do you do? And then...
They're just like...
There's supposed to be a ruse. This is a ruse that he is putting on these people. And they're like, I'm going to study your sleep. Yeah. At no point through this movie does he ever ask a question about their sleep.
And, I mean, the extent is like, Owen Wilson's like, you know, like, wow, I really got stiffed on the rooms. Man, this is like, that's the extent of it. It's like, yeah, this is a gigantic mansion that is... it's so obviously haunted before you even enter it, and then there are all these little children's faces that are carved in the walls, staring at you. It's they didn't really. It took him a while to start to question that maybe this isn't this Liam Neeson character is not all he's cracked up to be.
Do you know when I would have? Do you know when I would have raised the red flag on this sleep study? Mm. It would have been the first night. Where the lead scientist is, they're having wine and like they're like just chatting away at a dinner party, and it's like I'm like what are you doing?
No discussion. There's no. It's like all he has them taking are these tests that we don't really see, and they're just like.
They're just like they're mazes.
Yeah, they're mazes. Yeah,
they're crosswords
and
mazes.
It's like fucking kids. Like he didn't even try to make it look.
And
legitimate.
At one point, the lead actress says, "I'm really having trouble with this." And it's like it's like a maze off the back of a Cheerio box. And it's like, and she's like, "I'm really struggling with this one." While Owen Wilson just wanders.
He was kind of a relief at times because. You know, back to the whole feeling bad thing, because like Owen Wilson's like also he's like a screenwriter. He wrote movies with Wes Anderson, and like he's a legit like to imagine him early in his career. It's a big movie for DreamWorks and Spielberg and stuff. So, you know, it makes sense to take it, but then to end up just being such garbage because it's really And the movie it's based on, like, is a legit movie. It came out in the 60s. It was directed by Robert Wise, who's like an old, great Hollywood director, directed Sound of Music and, like, a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, wow.
But it's, like, it's supposed to be great. Like, Martin Scorsese actually listed it as his favorite horror film. So, I mean, that says something. But from what I gather, and this is, I think, one of the many things that they got wrong in this remake... is that the original movie, what makes it so great is you don't see anything. It's all sound. It's all just like sound and the, you know, bumps in the night and the way the room, like physical effects. But there's no, obviously it was pre-CGI, but that is where they totally fuck this up because they literally do the opposite. They literally are like maximum CGI, and it's fucking terrible. It's so terrible.
It's awful. It was such a scary movie up until the part where the CGI came in. Like the first, when you think about them just walking through, nothing's happening. Them just walking through. I literally wrote down, I go, I can already see all of the awful things that can happen in this house. Yeah. Like, I was just like I in my brain, I had already concocted. I'm like, this is going to be awful. I can see all of these things that are going to go wrong. And then the first kind of haunting scene where it is just noise and it is just sound is actually scary. It is terrifying.
If only the movie had stayed like that.
Yes, but then they were like, oh, we'll just use all this CGI. It stops being scary. It's like, I see what it is. It's awful. That's not scary at all.
No, it just becomes like industrial light and magic, you know, freaking party over here. And I'm not here for it. I didn't care for this movie. I didn't like it. I didn't like the characters. The character we're supposed to like, Lily Taylor's character. I hated her so much. And I think she's a fine actress. But again, that's why my heart is breaking, because I'm like, this. What do you do with a part like that where she's at a certain point just. She has no inner monologue, and she is literally just screaming every thought, like, the children, I have to go save the children. Oh, look, a door, it's opening. Like, it's so bad. Yeah. It's so bad that I wanted her, I'm glad she died at the end, okay?
I'm fucking
glad she's dead. Okay.
So are all of the, like, I mean, yes.
Spoilers. And for this shit movie.
Who gives a shit? In addition, did they choose to, like, at a certain point, she stopped being from that century and started to be from the 1800s. Yes. Like, she's wearing a nightgown that looks like it was made in 1835. Yeah. And it's like, and I'm like, is that yours, or did you just start wearing the shit that's in this house? Like, what is going on? She plays it as if she's a child.
Yeah.
There's parts of this that she plays it as if she is not fully, like, mentally
she is
developed.
She is like, she's so weird. She's weird and she's creepy. And like, I don't want to think that about the protagonist. Like, you know, other people might think about that, but you're not supposed to think that way. I was like, she's fucking weird and I don't like her and get her away from me. Like, there, when she is talking to about, like, I forgot to remember who she's talking to, but she's talking about, like, her past. Cause we haven't set up the character, but so,
who cares? Well, I said she's awful.
But so her mom, she spent like the last 12 years or whatever taking care of her mother who was sick and who died. And now that her mother has died, her sister kicks her out basically because they want to sell their apartment or the house or whatever.
Right.
So she's dealing with so she spent all these years taking care of her mom and all the, and so she's kind of dealing with the fallout of like the trauma of that. But she's talking to like Liam Neeson or somebody, and they're like, and she says like, oh no, I studied purgatory. I was there once for 11 years in reference to the time with her dead mom. But she says it happily. She's like, oh yeah,
yes.
I was in purgatory. I lived there for 12 years. And she smiles. And it's like,
yes,
I hated her. I was like, it drove me crazy. Like,
But that brings up something that I think all the characters do. All of the characters. Yeah. For some reason, all of the characters, her more, way more than others, by all means. But all of the characters, for some reason, their reactions are not believable, and they are from out of left field. Yeah. Like, I wrote down Liam Neeson's lead assistant, who gets basically half her face sliced in half by a harpsichord early in this thing.
That freaked me out a little bit.
Right? Within seconds, Liam Neeson is laughing about it. Did you notice this? Like, she gets sliced. I mean, from her chin.
It's a serious
up
injury.
Through her eye.
She's probably gonna lose the eye. Like,
lose the eye. Absolutely, she's gonna lose the eye. And Liam Neeson is laughing.
Any more wine? Like,
within seconds. Yeah. Who wants some more wine? You know? Oh, isn't that funny? And I'm like,
you guys better go get some sleep.
Right. Like, I'm just like,
I haven't saw me.
It didn't match at all. And then like repeatedly things happen and no one's freaking out.
No.
Like, no one's freaking out. And I'm like, I'm like,
I would have been gone so fast. What? Like,
oh my God. I'm like, what the fuck?
I was the first fucking creepy child face I saw coming out of the wall. I'm just like, I'm good. I'm done. I'll have insomnia. I don't fucking care. Like,
I'm not solving my sleep here.
Not helping,
sir.
It's ridiculous.
It doesn't make any sense. So there's a moment in the middle. So the haunting stuff is starting to progress, right? It's starting to get more and more. And more and more prevalent. There are things, right? And then, again, I just want to remind everybody, there are only three people in this study, and Liam Neeson. So there are a total of four individuals in the house. Okay, four individuals.
We had two more, but they're dispatched immediately. Like they, and one of them, and one of the, not the girl, but the guy,
not the lead assistant,
the guy who is literally, and I was stunned by this because that guy is Todd Field, who is, he's an actor. He was in Eyes Wide Shut. He was in a lot of stuff, but he's also a director, and like he directed In the Bedroom and that movie Tar with Kate Blanchett that came out a couple years ago. He fucking directed that movie, and that's him. And he literally, I don't think he had a line. I think he came in, they're like, "This is Todd." And then, okay, Todd, take her to the hospital, and then he's fucking gone.
That was gone.
It was amazing.
It was gone.
Like
the other so the assistant and Todd have left. Yeah. The other two, there are two other people that are presumably there every day, which is the caretaker
Bruce Dern is in this movie. He plays the guy who lets them in the beginning.
And the main maid, I don't know what she's
Is very portentous and says like, "We only come back at night or in the dark." And like,
yes.
I mean, Lily Taylor kind of makes fun of her, but it's this really like bad, like, because she speaks that way too. She's like, "We only come back. We don't, or like, you, if
we do not come
if you
back
scream,
in the
if
dark.
If you scream, it doesn't matter because no one will be here to hear you. We don't come back in the dark, in the night." Like, literally talks like that.
Yes. And you're just like,
but then they just, they vanish. Just never.
They are supposed to be there every day, and yet they're not there during the middle of the
day. They spend this enormous amount of time with her giving this fucking ridiculous speech as if they're going to be a common fixture in the house of like, oh boy, this is like the creepy, quirky people we're going to have to get used to. And then it's like, nope, see you later. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
So presumably at max six people, but we never see those two individuals. Yeah. Four. So the hauntings are getting more thing. And at one point, there is red paint written, "Welcome home,
Eleanor,"
whatever her
I
name
think
is. Eleanor. Yeah. Eleanor. "Welcome home, Eleanor," on like a 40-foot
Which is
ceiling,
Lily Taylor's character's
right?
name.
And Lily Taylor's character, the creepy one, I'm just like...
And she's like, "Who did this?
Someone wrote it.
Who did this?
Someone wrote it, right?" And Liam Neeson is like, "We're just going to continue on with the study.
This is like, this is nothing to worry about."
He doesn't do any investigating on who did it, why they did it.
It's a totally normal occurrence.
He's like the suggestion that they give that the movie gives is that Liam Neeson believes that Eleanor did it. Okay. And the best part about it is that Owen Wilson, in his defense, when they accuse Owen Wilson of doing it, he says the thing that is just plain fucking obvious, which is, "Yes, me and my 20-foot extension ladder that I keep in my back pocket."
I appreciated
pocket.
That line. Yeah.
Yes. I'm like, and yet,
so
yet that is presumably, that is what Liam Neeson is writing down in his notes, is that Eleanor did it. Eleanor is like 4 foot two. There is no way she's going to get up there and do that. And so, but he just...
Liam Neeson is the worst scientist ever. I feel, honestly,
ever.
I'm sorry, I feel bad for calling him a scientist. I take that back. I won't even refer to him as a scientist.
Oh,
he is just a quack.
I wrote down at the end, after, spoiler. So, as a scientist, his career is over.
God.
He just ran a study in which 50%, or no, sorry, 66% of the participants died.
There was one survivor, really. Study. I mean, there was him, but there was one survivor of, under his care. There was multiple fatalities.
One assistant lost an eye. Yes. One assistant lost an eye, and you lost
two people died.
One
of them
patients.
Decapitated, which was pretty great. I did like that part when Owen Wilson, spoilers, Owen Wilson is decapitated in this movie.
Oh my God.
I enjoyed that. But I appreciated Owen Wilson's comic relief at times, although then eventually he's just when he starts to hit the painting on the wall like in anger, the painting of Hugh Crane, yes. who's like the guy who's essentially haunting the house, and he's like this evil spirit or whatever.
Right.
Who looks like his portrait looks like fucking. I'm like, why is there a picture of Wolverine on their wall? He looks yes. like Wolverine or like Beast from X-Men. And then the best thing is when they. It's as if that painting wasn't kind of exaggerated enough. They then show photographs of him, and it is a guy who is just dressed up to look like this crazy figure in this painting, and it looks. Preposterous. Like, it looks like a guy with these incredible, like, mutton chops, and, like, and it's like cartoonishly bad, and it's not scary the least.
It's not scary. But see, I wrote down, so at a certain point, the first haunting, if we remember at the beginning, Catherine Zeta-Jones and Lily, whatever her
CZJ.
Name is.
CZJ, that's what I call
Eleanor.
Him. Sorry.
CCJ, whatever. What is the other actress's name?
Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Catherine.
Lily Taylor.
Lily Taylor. Okay, so Lily Taylor and Catherine Zeta-Jones, in that first haunting, they have adjoining rooms, and there's this noise and groaning and things happening, yeah. right? And the movie... They go down to the kitchen, and Owen Wilson turns on the water in the kitchen, mm. and then you hear these pipes start groaning, which do sound very similar to mm. what's happening outside of the banging
right,
of the door,
yeah.
obviously. But they've given you a plausible kind of explanation right. in that sense. What I thought, there was a point where I was like, is she actually delusional? Mm. This is before they start doing all the CGI bullshit. Right. There was a couple moments where I was like, is she actually delusional? Are we just seeing what she is right. seeing and they don't actually see it? Because there's a couple points where she sees a dead hanging, like someone
right.
who's hung
yes.
themselves
yeah.
and they don't
yeah.
see it, right? And so there was a moment where I'm like, is she delusional? Is she just making this all up in her head and they don't
yeah.
see it? That would have been a cooler movie.
Yeah, much. Yeah.
And that... That would have been a way that they could have used all this crappy CGI mm-hmm. and had it be more terrifying, because the thing that would be scary would be whether or not she's going to fucking do something crazy because of the things that she's
yeah.
seeing, not because of the things that are happening in the
yeah.
house. And kind of like The Shining, almost exactly like The
yeah.
Shining, in the sense that it's not, well, I guess there's parts of The Shining. I don't know. Stephen King's version is different, but anyways, my point is that the house makes her go crazy, and then that's the scary part
right.
is the fact that that person is crazy.
Right.
That would have been a cooler
yeah.
movie, and I thought for a moment there, I was like, ooh, maybe they're going that way, which would turn the whole fear thing to a different thing. But no, they didn't do
no,
that. It's just
that, not at all.
Just as a tangent of me saying I thought at some point that maybe it would be a decent movie, and then I was quickly reminded that no, it's, oh, no, they're just, it's, this is exactly what
no,
it is.
Yeah, no,
it
yeah.
It is a shit movie.
Yeah, I really... It wasn't scary, and it was, and I wanted it to be over, and I mean, I did appreciate seeing 1999 era Catherine Zeta-Jones. I enjoyed that immensely. I remember this too. This like the well. In truth, there's two things I remembered about this movie. One was that the trailer was creepy, and number two was that Catherine Zeta-Jones was bisexual in it, and those are the only two things as a 14-year-old boy I remembered about this movie. And I do remember that being kind of like, ooh, at the time, because she makes one comment like, well, my boyfriend thinks this, but my girlfriend does it. And it's like kind of hint, and it hints there's a little bit of homoerotic tension between her and Lily Taylor, who is like, Lily Taylor's like, get the fuck away from me. She's like very, I'm not saying she has to be, maybe she's creeped out, but the way she, the way those scenes are handled, there's no eroticism to it. It's just like, it's like her reaction to it makes it feel, which is makes me wonder if maybe that, I mean, they were like, well, she is going to be bisexual because that makes it interesting, but we're not going to follow through
with
that.
We're not doing that.
We're not going to do anything about that. We're not going to actually like have it feel truthful at all. Just we just want to imagine for a second that she's had sex with women too. You know, that's it. That's it's like it's so bad. Like it's so. And she, you know,
it doesn't add anything to her character
absolutely
either.
Absolutely nothing. It's I don't understand. I don't know why any of them were there or why any of them existed. Like they didn't. They nothing justified this movie's existence to me.
This is the thing is that it, at the beginning of the film, I could see this movie being so much better.
It could have been.
Like, it could be so much better. And it's just like, I feel like the characters became caricatures of they just weren't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think, they were just like Catherine Zeta-Jones was just her character was just. I don't get it. Like she's at one point incredibly, like, she's trying to play this like worldly sophisticate, but kind of like a I don't not debutante, but like a.
Well, she's very like very literati, hit, like hit very party very, girl kind
yeah.
of yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And she's like out there and she's on the cutting edge of
lives,
socialite.
Yeah,
that's what
right,
I'm trying to come up with.
Socialite. Yes, yeah.
And she's that's who she's trying to portray. But then by the end of it, her reactions to like she doesn't act like a socialite would act in that situation. She starts acting like someone who has a genuine relationship with Eleanor, right. And I'm like that socialite should be like, get me the fuck out of here. I met this woman a year, like a day ago. I do not have any alliance or allegiance to the crazy, creepy girl. Like, let me just get out of here.
She's like, she's like smitten with her for some reason when they meet. And it's, it's very confusing. You know,
is Karina, do you know the Karina girl?
Yeah.
She looks like the Karina girl.
Lily Taylor.
Yeah. They're the same person.
I didn't think about that. I didn't make that
connection. Well, I did. It's just a thought.
That was the saddest capper to that. I'm still, now I feel bad. Well, that's what
it's okay.
Anyway, moving on. Oh, it was so sad.
That wasn't a proper improv. It wasn't yes and, Matt. You're supposed to go yes and, not just kill
I'm
it.
Like,
I just was like, oh,
no,
well, that's
I'm,
what I thought.
I'm,
so.
I'm yes, no. That's me. Or I'm yes. That's my improv style.
Okay.
Yes and. That should be the other. There's yes and then there's yes and. And that's when you're just kind of phoning it in.
Okay, so one of my the part where I started laughing, okay, was so I gotta ask the question because this is in the original movie, was she the granddaughter or like?
I don't know. That's a good question.
It comes out later. It comes out into the movie that Eleanor is like a relative of the entity that is haunting this house. And like the big reveal, the big like shocking reveal, the thing that is supposed to just go, oh my God, you're supposed to go, oh, was when it becomes apparent that that Liam Neeson's character didn't call her at the beginning. So at the beginning of the movie, Eleanor gets a phone call about an ad in a paper, and then that's how she goes to this, gets into this sleep study. Mm. Well, then it's like she says, "Oh, well, Dr. Crane, you call," or Dr. whatever the fuck his name is, Dr. Neeson, you, you Dr. called Liam me. Neeson. And he's like, "I never called you." Yeah. He's like, I never called you. And so you find out that the house called her.
Yeah.
And like, that's how she got there. And that was supposed to be this, you were supposed to, I guess, get more fear out of it, you know, which I could see working. But
no,
at that point I was like, I don't care.
It's so, no, this was that everything they decided to do with her character pissed me off. Like, it just made me, it was such a like manufactured try to like, it's a great example of when they, of when studio films, I feel like they try to assume what the audience wants, and they're like, well, you know, we hear that people, they want, you know, they want more like emotional involvement in the characters, you know, in these kind of movies and blah, blah, blah. And then they, so then they manufacture this overly complicated story that, that on paper and as like a concept maybe has some like emotional heft to it, but you, but it's so poorly executed, and it's so, and you don't have the time, if you don't have enough time to develop that, it's very delicate when you do that kind of stuff in these movies, and you either can do it right or you do it shitty, and they did it shitty in this movie. And I'm, you know, and I'm looking, I'm looking at the Wikipedia of, I was looking at the synopsis of the original movie, and I could be totally wrong, but I was breezing through it, and I don't think that in that version there's any connection between her and the house in terms of like, she's the granddaughter of the fucking guy. That's all manufactured for this.
Granddaughter, my ass.
Yeah.
Granddaughter, my ass. Do you know how old that guy has to be? Like, there is no fucking way. Like, every a human being. Like, you would have had to have your child at like 80 and then 80 again for her to be the grandchild of that fucking person.
I think he's great, great grandpa.
Whatever.
It's still fucking stupid. It's
fucking stupid.
It's really stupid.
And, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, this is like an, I think this is an example of, they had a cool, like, I think it started with Spielberg probably going like, I want to do, you know, the original's great. Let's do something like that. And I am sure, I mean, if he had done it, I'm sure it would have been much better. But it's just but I think they start off, because like you said, those initial scenes, like that first like haunting scene where it's really, it's like the original where it's no CG, it's just sounds, is very effective. And actually, I can imagine, especially like in a theater, which I saw in the theater, but I don't, that's, the movie didn't make that great of an impression on me. But I can imagine like a scene like that would be really cool to see in a theater. And I think that was kind of the appeal of the original too, the sound of it and everything. So I think they started with that idea, but then they just, it was such a, they copped out basically. And they were like, audiences won't go for something like that. We need to do special effects and we need to make it bigger.
Yeah, right.
And then it, you know, the more money they throw at it, it just gets more complicated. And then it just, they lose focus of actually making a good movie. And it ends up becoming this like Frankenstein monster thing, which is what happens with a lot of these kind of movies. And that's what happened here. And it's a bummer because there's really good people involved. But I felt terrible for all of them. And I didn't. It was a very unsatisfying, you know, not enjoyable experience, this movie. It was just like.
No. And she's. I think you've hit the nail on the head with the Frankenstein. It's like the key is that this, to me, is a movie without direction.
Yeah.
Like it, and I don't mean like the director. Well, and I guess it is the fault of the director. I would say that I don't like at the end of it. I don't know what the intent of the movie is, because for some reason, at one point, you know, it's a straight horror flick, right? Where they're in there and they got to get out. That's the kind of the concept.
Yes.
They got to survive. But then at another point, there's like, she's got to rescue the souls of the children.
Yeah.
And just another, again, as everyone who listens to this podcast knows, my brain stays firmly in the theater every single time. I just want to say, at one point, she finds a hidden fucking passageway that leads down to the private study of Mr. Crane with a ledger, and she comes walking into a fucking room with four other individuals with a volume, a book that is presumably 160 years old with fucking names of people that he has murdered, and she just says it to them and they ignore. She's wandering around holding this book that she found in a hidden passageway and it's just ignored. No one even references it. I'm like, what is going on? That is where I thought the delusional, this is where I thought, like, the reactions are so wrong that I'm thinking maybe they're doing a Sixth Sense, because the Sixth Sense is right around here. I'm like, maybe they did a Sixth Sense thing where only she thinks she has this book. She doesn't really have the book, and she, to them, she's just holding herself. But no, they just didn't respond.
No, they it was the filmmakers who who had no who had no common sense. This was just a,
at no point did the directors go, why don't you mention the fact, why don't you guys take a look at the book she's holding? Like,
they were delusional.
Just come up with something better to dismiss than just ignore. Matt, put yourself in your, I know I'm kicking a dead horse here, and I can tell by your facial expression and everything that you hate this movie so much that you don't even want to talk about it. But the I can feel how much this movie is just a drain on your existence. But I just want you to put yourself in
this.
Matt, imagine yourself, you and I are in an old house. And I come walking up to you, and I say, hey, Matt, I found this in, this hidden passageway that went down, and I found this book. Do you see this book? And it's got a list of
dead
people
old.
That this guy killed. That, look what I found. And you just look at me and go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no.
We're here for a sleep study. It's like, what is going on?
No comment whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no common sense to the characters. This is just an example of filmmakers having absolutely no respect for their audience's intelligence. And that's what happens when you try to, when you deliberately set out to make a big movie that's shooting for, you know, box office. This is, you know, an era where they're definitely starting to get into, like, obsessing about, I mean, they've been for a while, but the opening weekend, you know, where that really started to truly define the movie. Because there was a time when, like, I mean, in 1988 or whatever, the highest grossing movie that year was Rain Man. You know what I mean? Like, that's the highest grossing movie of that year. And it's like, there was a time, or like even like Forrest Gump or something, which is, has special effects and stuff, but it's not a conventional, like, you know, popcorn type movie. Like, there was a time when certain, like, movies that were taken seriously were successful. And then it just started to become more and more when they start making sequels. And it's why, you know, I mean, I bet if you look at, for the last, you know, 15, 20 years, the highest grossing movie of every year, I guarantee you, was part of a franchise and was not like some, you know, not like a Rain Man or something like that. Like, it's, I feel nostalgic for days when audiences went out to see good movies and, like, movies that were smarter and respected their intelligence more, but instead they make shit like this. And even though this came out in fucking 1999, I'm still angry about it. God damn it.
It's
I won't stand for this.
So Matt, so this movie has probably the worst line I have ever heard in a movie. Oh. And the worst ending I've ever seen in a movie. Okay, the worst line is the part where Lily, what's her face, just says something along the lines of, like, "This is my family, Grandpa," or something like that.
To the ghost.
As she's yelling
to the giant ghost man,
the smoke man, and I'm like, I. I just was like,
you know, she says it was worse. It was worse. Shit. She was like, this is like, this is my family, Grandpa, and I've come home. Kind of, and it's like, yeah. I was like, I fucking hate you and this movie.
Yes,
I
it was
just
so bad.
Die now. Like, it was so bad. I thought, I will say that is a terrible line, but I thought maybe we were going to say my favorite line that I was really baffled by, and maybe, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't have been, but it's a part, again, when Lily Taylor is being, I keep wanting to say Lily Tomlin, which is like a very different,
I know.
I mean, I would have liked this movie a hell of a lot more. No offense to Lily Taylor, she's great. But anyway, she says, she's talking very happily about like her life trauma, and then she segues into like, you know, I never thought I'd actually be on an adventure like in this spooky house with things, like she's very excited about what's happening, which is just really creepy, again, to reinforce her creepiness. But then she says, I always thought that, you know, adventures are for soldiers or for the women bullfighters fall in love with. Yeah. Is that like a thing that
Women bullfighters fall in love with?
Like, she says, adventures are for soldiers or for the women bullfighters fall in love with. I'm really confused by this line. I don't understand what the writer is trying to say with that line. I understand the first part.
Now that you say it, I'm
soldiers,
now more confused.
Fine,
by it.
But the women bullfighters. Why not say soldiers or bullfighters? Like, what? The women bullfight.
So are the women? Are the women? So hold on. The women
that fighters.
So it's not female bullfighters.
No, it's
okay. So it's not. Okay, it's not no. that. So it's women. So who's having the adventure? The bullfighter is having the adventure with a woman, or the woman is having an adventure with the bullfighter?
To go by her grammar, as it was written, she is saying that the women are having the adventure, and I guess their adventure is that a bullfighter fell in fucking love with them. I don't know. It's the stupidest line. I don't understand it. I don't even now understand it anymore. Having said it and talked about it,
I feel like
I understand the dialogue in Valley Girl more than that line. Like, honestly,
tripendicular.
Ridiculous.
It sounds like somebody having. It sounds like a really bad attempt at like a reference to Hemingway or something. God. Like it feels like. For
maybe they thought it was poetic or something. Yeah, yeah.
It's like this Hemingway-esque kind of "For Whom the Bell Tolls." Like,
it's just obtuse and confusing and
no,
ridiculous.
It's awful. I'm not defending it at all. It makes no sense. It's ridiculous. Although it does feel right for the creepy character to say something absurd
that doesn't make
like
sense.
That.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
But I agree with you that it's like kind of like what. Soldier, and again, reactions are not there.
Nobody. Everybody is totally nonplussed by incredible things happening. So
let me ask you this. Here's another thing that's ridiculous, and I don't understand. Liam Neeson, right? So up until the very end, nothing. None of this horrific stuff. None of this paranormal activity happens to Liam Neeson. None of it, right? Until the house statue decides to grab him and then put him under the water. Right. And at that point, I'm thinking, they're going to kill Liam Neeson right now. And I'm like, oh, that would be
a nice
scary
twist,
and
yeah.
kind of an interesting sure. twist. And then, no, the house just decides to just let him go.
And just wanted to
inexplicably.
Like, it's like dunking him in the toilet or something. Just wanted to fuck with you a little bit, dude. Like,
yes!
That's all right.
Why?
You run along now.
What happened there? Because Liam Neeson doesn't get away. Yeah. There's no struggle.
House let him,
Liam
lets
Neeson
him
is grabbed. Liam Neeson is grabbed by a stone fucking statue. Yes. Which grabs him firmly, not by the collar, not by the shirt that where he could scramble out, by his,
whole, his
body,
whole body,
and puts him underwater, right? And then he just lets him go.
Like I just wanted to give you a swirly, and then you can leave.
Just letting you know,
Hey,
I'm real.
I'm here.
I'm here.
Boo.
You know,
I am here.
It's like, well, we can't kill Liam Neeson right now.
oh my God.
So anyways, that I was just, that's another point where I started laughing. I'm like, why did the house just let him go?
It just like, wants the toy with them.
What's going on here?
I
don't get it. The reason why I said it was the worst ending I've ever seen in the movie. Catherine Zeta-Jones and Liam Neeson, two people have died. Yeah. The caretakers show up, and the caretakers show up to a car that is just rammed into the gate, right? Wedged into the gate. And Liam Neeson and Catherine Zeta-Jones are sitting there. They unlock the gate. And they just wander off,
that's right.
And like leave the caretakers
to discover a decapitated body one, and another dead person just laying there. Two bodies. That's true. I honestly, you're right. That is insane, and that is exactly what happened. And by that point, I was just so glad it was over. I didn't even notice how ridiculous that is. But that is so fucking.
There's no explanation.
Ridiculous.
There's no explanation. They don't call. They don't call the police. They don't call anybody.
It's that classic like diehard thing of at the end of the movie, they just got to walk off like going, well, what are you doing tomorrow or something? You know, like,
they just wander off. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, all I can think of, again, my brain doesn't turn off. All I can think of, you've got to now explain. They've got to explain. They have killed
the scene
of an accident. Paranormal activity. Not only that, but they have exorcised the demon, and it is no longer there. So they can't even prove their theory of the events. It's gone. So they are going to jail. Both of those people are going to jail.
I mean, Liam Neeson should already go for like malpractice or something. I don't know know what you'd call it. But
disbarred, he'd be gone. He'd lose his. Whatever license.
I don't think he didn't have a license, fucking guy.
Whatever. But they're going to jail.
Yeah.
Those two individuals are going to jail because the caretakers are going to walk in there. They were alive yesterday, and they walked out, and they're going to go, no, it was the house. The house did it. And they're going to be like, the fuck are you talking about? There's two dead people.
They're
going to
end up like on death row for murdering two people.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, no.
Worst ending.
But kind of fitting for the movie that preceded it. So,
well, yeah.
So,
yeah.
In a way, we can't. You know, it's not that shocking. But yes, that is. Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Right.
This movie sucked. I'm sorry. Like,
it's just really bad.
I am again upset that it's one of the ones that I was like, well, eventually we're gonna. But it. I don't know. We did it. And
doesn't hold up.
No, yeah, that's good that we should, to get back on theme. No, this does not hold up. It didn't hold up in 1999 because I remember it not being good previously. I don't remember this. I remember it. There were three things I remembered. I remembered the trailer was scary. I remember Catherine Zeta-Jones was bisexual. And I remembered that it sucked. And so, but it's still, I thought, let's watch it. But because that's what we do here. We watch shitty movies from our childhood, and there was a time when this was the best thing to see that weekend. Like, it was probably
Matt, there were few movies that we were like, I'm not seeing that.
We
went and saw most.
Yeah,
movies.
I did not start to become discerning until high school age, probably.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, there's a movie. We're gonna go see it. So I think it's pretty clear. Two nuns down. Did Roger Ebert review The Haunting?
He did. And this is continuing.
Oh God,
this is continuing a disturbing trend. That we've alluded to in previous episodes that's been happening.
There's no fucking way that he's positive about this.
I'm afraid
movie.
To tell you this.
Oh God, please don't tell
Roger Ebert. The Roger Ebert gave The Haunting, the 1999 version, not the original, the 1999, he gave it 3 stars.
Don't
he
do
gave it 3 stars.
Fuck you!
The same
no way.
Rating, yes, as Jurassic Park, he gave
no way. To this movie. That is no way.
He did. It's
based off of what information?
I will try to explain.
He was fucking kidnapped and shown a different movie. There is no way that he is giving this 3 stars.
I think Roger Ebert was replaced by a pod person for like the 90s.
This is ridiculous.
That's my only
man.
The only conclusion I can come to. Okay, so this is let's see if he can justify it. Roger says this. To my surprise, I find myself recommending The Haunting on the basis of its locations, its sets, its art direction, its sound design, and the overall splendor of its visuals. The story is a mess, but for long periods of time, that hardly matters. It's beside the point as we enter one of the most striking spaces I've ever seen in a film. That space is Hill House, the haunted manor selected by a psychology professor, Liam Neeson, for an experiment in the mechanics of fear. He recruits 3 people who are told they'll get help for insomnia and installs them in the ornate and gloomy gothic pile where alarming things start to happen immediately. We assume the frightening manifestations are manufactured by the professor, last name Marrow, but perhaps not.
No, we don't. No, we don't.
I mean...
No, we don't, Roger. What the fuck are you talking about? At no point...
I didn't believe that.
We're shown it in the first goddamn 10 minutes, when the harpsichord breaks and slices the woman's face in half. We're shown a screw that is of its own accord spinning open to allow this fucking thing to come on.
Although,
what film were you watching?
It would have been much more interesting. Liam Neeson brings these people to a manor and like scares them to death deliberately. But anyway,
That would have been a better movie, too.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, he continues. The 3 patients are played by Lily Taylor, Catherine Zeta-Jones, and Owen Wilson. Professor Marrow is joined by 2 assistants, but in one of the screenplay's several clumsy moves, one of them is injured during the first night, the other takes her to the hospital, and that's the last we ever see of them.
Yeah, they're there for a week. They're there for a week. They never come back. He never checks up on her. He never finds out if the eye is fine.
I know. I'm glad he saw that, at least. Taylor's character, named Nell, is the key figure in the film, a woman whose life has been on hold until the ghosts of Hill House start to tell their story. The exteriors were shot at Harlaxton Manor in Nottinghamshire. Its architectural details look like a shriek from hell. Now I know what a building looks like with its hair standing on end. It's a bit of an anticlimax to discover that the building is currently used as a foreign campus of the University of Evansville, Indiana. See, then he does something like that, and he's got me back. Like, that's so great. It takes something away from its atmosphere. Would you know that? I guess. That's amazing.
What's the name of the college?
The University of Evansville, Indiana.
Oh, it's not even I've never heard of that.
That
college.
Is the okay. Biggest fucking like. That's preposterous. Like, what kind of, what is that God. Crew like in that place? That's, wow. Okay. Let me see. He's not convincing me. Let's see.
He hasn't provided one thing.
Lily Taylor struggles valiantly with her character, the movie's juiciest, and has some effective scenes, mostly
Fuck
by
that.
Herself.
No.
No, she does not. I can be a victim or I can be a volunteer, she tells herself when the going gets really rough. The rest of the
didn't like that line.
Neither did I. The rest of the characters are underwritten, including Catherine Zeta-Jones's beautiful Theo, who does some bisexual lip smacking at the outset, but never follows up and spends most of her time running to the rescue. Owen Wilson, as the guy, asks obvious questions and helps tug open doors, etc., but is not made much of, and neither is Liam Neeson's professor, whose motivations are explained in some flat opening scenes and who then goes adrift in the plot. All right, you two, enough about pharmaceuticals. But the special effects are original and effective, evoking a haunted house in unexpected ways. A floor-level gliding camera is insinuating. Scenes set in a huge old conservatory are creepy in the way they use dead vegetation, and there's a nice scene on a shaky spiral staircase. To enter these rooms, to move among them, to feel their weight and personality is an experience. I am reminded of the abandoned subway station in Mimic, another space with a personality of its own. The movie often edges so close to being truly scary that you wonder why they didn't try just a little harder to write more dimensional characters and add the edge of almost plausible realism that distinguished Shirley Jackson's original novel. The movie does not, alas, succeed as a horror film, but it succeeds as a film worth watching anyway, and that is no small achievement. Oh, no. No, Roger.
So I just want to say that Roger Ebert's reviews aren't holding up. Oh, years later. Okay. I think yeah. There is something going on here, clearly, Matt. This is going to take us down a different tangent, yeah. but I think we need to talk about it, which is that clearly something was going on at the late 90s yeah. that maybe we are not able to appreciate.
Yeah.
Maybe the CGI in this, which feels so fucking like terrible. Non, like scary and just ridiculous, childish, yes. is what it felt like to me at times. Maybe it was back then. It was good. Maybe visually, was. You were like, "Wow, look at that! It's amazing." And maybe we're undercut by that now. But so much of this movie was bad in so many ways that it wasn't visual. Yeah. I agree with him about the visuals of the room. We even said
yeah, it is.
The space is amazing.
It looks beautiful, but yeah, it's not enough to save it. It's not enough. Like, there are certain movies that are bad, but like the visual aesthetic is really cool and you can appreciate it even though the movie isn't that great. But this the design was beautiful, but not enough to... The thing is, it was cheapened by all the CGI. It's like you built these really great, genuine, practical sets, and then you just manipulate it with fucking CGI dead babies crawling across the fucking wall, and it's like, this is bullshit. It doesn't... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I don't...
They didn't need to do it.
No, this was an unnecessary...
They could have done the same movie with that set, and it would have been a great... Like, you could have done so much with just the set and sound.
Yeah, they should have done the... I want to see, in fact, I want to look what the budget was for this movie, because I'm sure it was ridiculous. $80 million in 1999. Yeah,
they should have...
But if they had made this movie for, you know, even like just $20 million or even less, like, and they'd done a minimalist kind of version, it could have been, like, I mean, look at Blair Witch Project, I think, which came out the same year, which, you know, like, is like, I mean, you can't get much more minimalist than that movie. You literally don't see anything. And it's like...
Well, but like, even if you take something like Sixth Sense, which is the same year as this, the scariest parts of Sixth Sense have no CGI. Yeah. You don't need it. Like, I don't understand. Obviously, CGI at this moment was, you know, it's just everybody, you got to use it. You know, it's like, and I guess people were exploring all the different ways you can use CGI. But I just genuinely think that the things that are most scary in movies are almost never the CGI. Yeah.
No, it's...
It is almost never the
I've
CGI.
Never,
I can't think of one thing. Can you think of one thing that was CGI where you were like...
Jurassic Park.
Terrified? Yeah, but
nothing...
But I would argue that the only reason why that worked was because...
There were practical ones too, and
it was sparingly, right. Like and then you had real ones, and you had like the stuff that was scary was the not seeing.
I mean,
knowing that they're there, and then you're like, where are they? Like, that is what was
I think.
Scary.
Well, honestly, I would say the ones that use it the best that are effective and they're scarier would be like I did love A Quiet Place in both of those movies. I thought were.
Haven't seen
of course
movie.
You and you won't, I'm sure, because they're no. super intense.
What
I mean,
yeah, fuck that.
The
no.
first one, like, I gave me such a bad tension headache. Like, by the end of it, I was like, but it's amazing. Like, it's really great. But like, the creatures in that are really good and pretty. Or like another really good one that relies a lot on CGI that I thought was really effective was Cloverfield. which is about a giant CG monster. But again, you only get brief glimpses of it. And because of the way the aesthetic of the movie and the found footage and the way it's shot, it feels just so much more effective, because it's like you're only getting these like stolen glimpses of things that are happening, and it makes it feel so much more real. And like, and so that's an instance where like they used effects, I think, really well and actually really effectively. But when you just shove it in our faces and just like there's nothing, like there is nothing remotely scary or emotionally exciting or anything about the end of this movie. It just becomes this giant like noise in my face that's happening that I want to stop.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I don't know where Roger I think Roger I also think it's important sometimes when we're talking about like film critics, I feel like if critics are writing their and publishing their review after the first time watching something, I feel like that's a mistake. And I don't know if that's, and maybe they do watch it at least twice, but I think every critic should watch a movie at least twice before they publish a review of it, because I think it works either way. I think the first time you watch something, you might love it and think it's amazing and appreciate all this stuff, and then watch a second time and go like, oh no, this is actually garbage. Or the other way around, you watch something and go like, that was really disappointing, and then you watch it again, you're like, oh, that's actually great. Like, I think sometimes I want to believe this, I guess, because I'm trying to explain it away in his defense.
Keep trying.
I know. But I think maybe it just, he was, because I do think he really does appreciate, because there's a lot of movies that are kind of like more sci-fi-y kind of stuff that he really liked, that were visually really, like, he really had a soft spot for like imagery and like style and design and stuff. So there are some movies that he gave like glowing reviews of that were just, you know, not great movies, but visually were cool. And I think sometimes he saw that a little, he placed that a little higher on his list of things that made a good movie. But in this case, it did not save it. I do not agree with that rating. And the fact that it has the same rating as Jurassic Park is an abomination. And it's just like, I want it to be like recanted, like from the history of movies. That is just horrifying.
That should go in the box, buried in the cabin,
yes,
below the cabin,
remain
in the woods.
Buried, yes.
That's over.
We don't have to watch that one again. So
nope, it's done. It's off the list. Two nuns down.
we no longer have to live in suspense of like, God, I wonder if The Haunting was great. But now we have our answer, so we can really sleep well at night now.
It's fucking awful.
Yeah. No, thank you.
All right, so off to, we're gonna pick
a
new one. So like off to bigger and better things. So we've got 483, I think, movies.
482 now, but yes,
482 movies. Let's do 407.
Drum roll. 407. Is Sudden Death, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
Oh, my God. Dude, our first JCVD movie.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be...
it is our...
Sudden Death. Sudden Death.
Do you remember even what this is?
There is a glimmer in my brain of what this
is. I barely remember anything about this. This was on the decline of the JCVD years, as I recall. I mean, he had a brief heyday, really, but it was a small window. And I think this is
very narrow.
This is when this, because I believe this is around the time of Street Fighter, that's when it was like, okay,
yeah.
I think we've had enough of you, JCVD. Although, no, he's done some stuff recently that's really great, and I love him. But anyway, Sudden Death, not one of his more memorable.
And we got
films.
To meet him.
And we did. We met him, and it was one of the most exciting. I mean, it was really probably the.
He was really
very
nice.
Very nice to two young boys who were big fans of his.
And interrupted him at
with a really beautiful woman.
Yes.
And like
yes,
some agent
I remember
or
that
something
vividly.
Probably. They were Yeah, maybe they were discussing the sudden death at the time.
Maybe, yeah, the contract for sudden death.
And he was like, man, those kids were so great. I'm going to take that part because I'm inspired by their love of me. This one is a big question mark for me. I just remember it. I remember it being kind of like Die Hard-esque. But I mean, what movie wasn't Die Hard-esque after Die Hard? So that's not really saying much of anything, really. But
I have no recollection of what this movie is about.
It's JCVD, so it's going to be worth checking out for sure.
I mean, I'm trying to think of the movies that I can think of him. Yeah. I got Bloodsport. Sure. I got Lionheart.
Lionheart.
I got Hard Target.
Yes. Probably the best.
I got Time Cop.
Yes, please.
Street Fighter. Yes.
Do you remember Nowhere to Run? Do you remember that one?
I remember the
name. Arquette is in it, and she takes a shower
okay.
at one point. Anyway, I remember that part.
I don't remember that.
Those are the five, and then Double Team with Dennis Rodman, which I think was kind of I never saw him again after that.
What is the one with the twins? When he plays
Double
twins?
Impact. So there was Double Team and Double Impact,
and then Double Impact. Okay.
God. So this is the first. I mean, I think pretty much all of those are on this list, of course.
Oh, Universal Soldier.
Oh yes.
Isn't that him too?
Him and Dolph Lundgren. And that was
Yeah,
I remember that one. Yeah. But right, we're doing something.
Yeah, he had the
90s, you know, but yeah, it was like 92 to 94, and then that's it. And we're done.
He got it full though. He went full tilt on it. All right, yeah. So
Sudden Death.
Sudden Death. Sorry.
I already forgot the fucking name.
I was just thinking, No Surrender. That's what we're watching.
All right, No Surrender. Gotcha. All right, good night.
I have no clue.
And you go watch No Surrender, which is, and then what the fuck
Devil.
That is.
What is that movie? Is that a movie?
I don't even know. It's probably a made-for-TV starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It sounds like a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. No Surrender.
It's a post.
All of his stuff are like these ambiguously aggressive.
No Surrender
movies.
Deep Impact is an asteroid movie. Rough Impact, rough knuckle punch, deliberate face punch. I like that one. That would have been my title.
Oh,
like I want to see an action movie called Deliberate Face Punch. That's if I ever make one, that's what it's going to be called.
Alrighty. Well, Matt, take us.
Yeah, don't
take
don't
us
watch
home.
The.
What are we watching? What am I? Sorry, what am I watching?
What?
What's the name that I'm watching? Sudden Impact. What am I watching?
You know what? That's a movie too. I'm pretty sure. You're gonna watch Sudden Impact. I am willing to bet. Hang on. It's Sudden Death. But hang on, I have to see.
Sudden Death, because I
know Sudden Impact is a movie, and I'm gonna have to.
Oh wait! I think I got this. Is Sudden Death the one where it's in hockey?
Yes, it's like a hockey.
He's got a hockey, and it's in overtime. Yes. And it's like he's in there saving. Okay, yes. I now remember. I've got visuals in my head on this.
And if you end
Sudden Death,
I will just say that if by some reason you end up watching Sudden Impact, it's a Dirty Harry movie. So it's a very different film with Clint Eastwood. Sudden Death.
Okay.
Sudden Death.
Sudden Death.
If you remember the sports thing, I think you'll have an easier
sudden
time.
Got it. Sudden Death.
Sudden Death.
Okay.
All right.
Whew. All right, Matt, take us away.
Don't watch The Haunting, watch Sudden Death, and we will catch you on the flip-flop. Ah, fuck me.